here and welcome to the Pack Heavy podcast. Now, this podcast is for anyone who works in the hospitality and food manufacturing industries who use flexible packaging to get their products to market. Featuring interviews with guests who have traveled the path that you're on so that you can learn from their successes and failures and engage in the mindset required to go all in on your vision. I call this mindset the Pack Heavy mentality, and it's primarily driven by deliberate action and extreme organization. You gather market intelligence, put a strong plan in place, organize the appropriate resources, and then confidently test your hypothesis against reality. So if you're ready to pack heavy on your vision, you're in the right place, and I'm excited to have you here. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of the Pack Heavy podcast. I'm your host, Hayden Thompson, and I'm honored to have Jackie Thomas, CEO and co-founder of Leeta's Mexican Food with us today. Titled the first plant-based Mexican food manufacturer in Canada and based in Vancouver, BC, Leeta's has been innovating traditional Mexican foods into 100% plant-based, healthy, and easy-to-prepare products. Since its inception in 2016, Jackie has accumulated an awesome amount of accolades, including the prestigious 2019 BC Food and Beverage Product of the Year, 2019 Outstanding New Product, and 2017 BC Farmers Market Vendor of the Year. Previous to Leeta's, Jackie successfully managed her own traditional Chinese medicine and natural nutrition health practice. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
No worries. Where are you based?
Right now, we live in Burnaby.
You're in Burnaby. Oh, yeah. Perfect. Just down the road.
Where is that where you are too?
No, we're based in Richmond and I live in Richmond as well, but I drive through Burnaby a lot with work. Yeah,
I like it here. I like Burnaby.
Very good. So you're raising two beautiful daughters in Burnaby as well?
Yeah. They're in school right now.
Very good. Actually, one of the first questions I wanted to ask to you today. So obviously the conversation will be really geared around Leeta's and, you know, building of the business right from its inception and the seed of the idea all the way through to where it is today. But I also wanted to touch on how it is to be a working mum and how you make it work and how you built a business around being a busy mum as well.
I don't know. A lot of coffee.
I guess that'd be the case. So how old are the girls now?
They just turned 13 and 9.
Okay, right.
So I have a teenager now.
Different transition into life, hey?
Yeah, it's cool. They're really good girls though. I couldn't ask for better kids. So
that's cool. Yeah, I was wondering, our two little kids, well, they're so young right now. Hazel's just turned 18 months and Zave, my little boy, is 3.5.
Oh, I like that age.
Yeah, it's so much fun. But you know, it's such a busy home life right now, you know, through the night and you know exactly what it's like. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was, so you started the business in 2016 and I guess the kids were a little bit older, so it allowed you some more time.
Yeah. Lucia, the youngest, she was almost ready to start kindergarten because they start when they're 5, because we were kind of working on things when she was like 4. So I thought, okay, this is a good time. You know, she's going to be in school. I don't have to be so hands-on anymore. Because when I was doing my practice, I was working like 3 days a week and an evening. So it was flexible. I could still manage home life with little ones, but Once they were like, okay, they're both in school, I had more time.
Very good.
It was so important.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And I guess, you know, having a business and being a business owner and operator, you know, all the way through their life is such a good foundation for them to sort of, you know, see how a business operates and see how mum and dad work so hard and so on as well.
Yeah. They're very nice. Like, they're patient with me because I work a lot and I know it hurts them sometimes. So I try to make sure I do make the time for them that I have to do and I want to do. But when I can't, they're old enough now that they get it and they understand. But also they tell me they're proud of me and stuff like that. So it's really cute.
Yeah, of course. And do you have family around you that you can help or that can help with the kids and so on as well?
No, my husband and I have lived in Vancouver the whole time with kids or maybe without any family here to help us. Just, we have friends, but it's not the same as having a grandma or grandpa nearby. So all my family's back east and all his family's in Mexico.
Right. So you grew up out east. Where were you in particular?
I was in New Brunswick in a little town called Prince William.
All right. And what brought you out here?
Well, after, I think in my early 20s, like around 25, I was always kind of itching to get out and do something more. At that time, I was kind of working in the health industry, and I had an opportunity to move to China. So I ended up living there for 4 years. And then when I was going to finish there, you know, I got into acupuncture there and more holistic medicine. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to school. So I just applied to different ones, and Vancouver's where I ended up, and I met my husband shortly after moving here.
Right. And he was traveling, or was he sort of, he decided to live his life here as well at that point?
No, he was here on a work visa, like a 1 year swap. And he was the age where you could get the swap visa. And I think he was working for TELUS or something like that, because he's an engineer in Mexico.
Right.
And I was working at a coffee shop that his friends from Mexico were here as well, and they worked at. And they said, "Oh, come to our party." It was his it was his birthday party. So we kind of met there, and he only had a few months left on his visa. So it was just kind of casual. And then I went to Mexico and I met his family, and I don't know, it just kind of grew from there. And then he ended up coming back, because long distance is really tough. And luckily he went to UBC and got his master's, and everything worked out. But it was a tough road.
That's awesome. Yeah, you and I share a similar story, in that my obviously Australian and my wife is Canadian. So we've done quite a bit of back and forth over the years, and we've definitely spent some time apart over the years as well, which is really difficult. And we obviously have got a young family and decided to set up shop here as well. So yeah, similar story in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's challenging when you don't have, hopefully she has some family here. She's from Canada.
Yeah. So Ash is from out east as well. Her family is predominantly based in Toronto, but her mum and dad came out a few years ago, and she does have a sister and a brother out here as well. But we're based in Richmond, and the family's all over the place. So no, we don't necessarily have hands-on help, and, you know, especially through COVID, it's been a bit of a, you know, barrier there as well.
Yeah, I feel you.
Exactly. So the business. So where did it all start? Why 2016, and how did the idea come about?
You know, my husband, the state that he grew up in Monterey, it has, Monterey is not the state, Nuevo León is, but the city of Monterey, there was a specific type of tortilla there, and it was the uncooked flour tortilla. And it's quite common around there. And whenever we'd go back, our suitcase would be full of all these tortillas. And, you know, then we'd run out, and I'd see some in the store, and I would say, okay, these are the ones, you know, you're going to be happy with. And he never was. And, you know, we ended up getting like a press that would work for flour tortillas. And he was just like, you know what, I'm just going to make them, you know. And I was like, okay, well, if you're going to make them, you're going to make them the way I want you to make them, because they have to have like certain ingredients that I can agree with.
Yeah.
And then we just, you know, we asked his mom about, you know, what does she use when she makes them? What's her recipe? And I did some research, and it wasn't too long, and we came up with a really good formula, and it just kind of grew from there. He started taking them to, you know, tacos to work, and people would say, "Hey, what's that? Like, that looks different." And, you know, he'd come home and say, "Oh, so-and-so wants to buy some." And then I was just like, "What? Like, ding, ding, ding. Like, this could, you know, could this be something?" And then I just kind of drove it from there.
Yep. That's awesome. So you saw an opportunity. And so it sort of grew out of your kitchen at home. And this is a similar story that I've had with a few people, whether it was Sarah from Chiwis or whether it was Eve from Eve's Crackers as well. You've all been, you know, such strong female entrepreneurs, and it's all been born out of wanting to provide a healthy option for yourselves to start with. And it's sort of grown, you know, based on a bit of demand from some family and some friends, and the light bulb's gone off. So, you know, when that light bulb went off and you did see, hey, there could be an opportunity here, what was your next step?
Well, I started to think about the packaging, actually, like, how are we going to put these, and how is it going to be minimal, so I'm not putting out too much waste, and then labels. And then, you know, also we were doing it still, you know, manually, with like a one-time, like a manual press, and that, eventually wasn't, gonna be enough. Like, it was just so slow. And so we just, you know, started to look around and found a press in Mexico, and we bought it and got it imported, like this huge heavy press. And it just kept going. And, you know, I just kept taking the next step. And I was like, okay, if we're going to do this, then we have to sell these somewhere else. So I contacted the farmers markets, and I got in there. And then we started doing that, like, very slowly, just a few dates here and there, and the whole family, all of us going. and, you know, just started, okay, now I'm getting more. And so now I need to get a commercial kitchen. So, you know, because we were doing it in our home kitchen, because it was safe to do that, because it was a low risk product for the farmer's market. So, you know, then I found a commercial kitchen, someplace to share with someone. And, you know, then I was like, okay, now I can get into stores. So I just started going out doing sales.
Yeah. So you really bootstrapped it yourself right from the start.
Yeah.
Did you have a vision like of where you wanted to end it up, or were you sort of just following your nose?
In the beginning, I guess, yeah, I really had no idea what it was going to be or what was going to be involved. I kind of had stars in my eyes and I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to sell this product and all of a sudden everyone's going to know about it and I'm going to be making money. And it's not, that's not how it goes, at least not for tortillas. And, you know, cause our product took a lot of, education around it because it was uncooked and, you know, so the markets were good for that, like building the brand base, you know, getting the popularity and explaining it one by one and one by one. And then as that kept going, I was like, okay, now I always wanted more. And then my vision started to grow from that. Like, what can my next step be? What's my next goal? So I always had a goal to go for. And in the beginning, it was like, I wanted to be organic certified. So that I got that. And then, you know, then came the, you know, I really wanted to build the brand more and the tortillas more and get people to know how great they are and buy them and just try them because they're just so much so good. And you know, there was a lot of education about the difference between corn and flour tortilla, and yes, Mexicans do eat flour tortillas, and you know, so that was part of the education process too. And then came the taco kits, and then I kind of had a larger vision of how I wanted the business to go. And that was like a purely plant-based. In the beginning, I wasn't really thinking about that. Like, I knew I was living a lifestyle like that, but it wasn't something on my radar until the taco kits kind of emerged.
Right, right. So, you know, the direction that you were sort of moving in, was that based off conversations that you were having with your consumer as well, as to sort of learning what was important to them and, you know, what value propositions were, you know, going to be critical to the success of the business as well?
Yeah, and the markets were really great for that because we always did it. And you know, I'd ask people if they came back, like, oh, you came back, and I remember faces well. I'm terrible at names, but so I would always say like, hey, you came back and how was it? Did you experience any problems? Because one of our main pain points is some people have a problem separating them. So, you know, I listen to feedback on that and how can I improve that in the process and in the packaging? And so that really helped me develop things better and move forward. And sometimes I would do like, okay, if you fill out this questionnaire, I'll give you a free salsa or something like that. And that was really helpful when I was going to change to organic. Like, was it important to you? Is it important? Because it's important to me. Mm. I needed to know how many consumers it was really important to. And farmers market's a specific type of shopper, but overall the consensus was yes, go for it. Or no, don't change a thing. It's perfect. But you know, I have to keep growing and improving it. And
And so how long did you stick with the business farmer model for? The farmer's market business model for?
Yeah, so I did that solely for about a year and a half, I guess. And then once I could, you know, get into the commercial kitchen, I was pretty fast to get onto the retail stores to, you know, bring up volume and stuff. But I still do go to the farmer's market. I did take a break over, you know, this winter. Because I hate the cold. I grew up back east, but I don't like the cold. And I was tired of my feet always being frozen and it was COVID. And I just thought this is a good opportunity for me to focus on more on the retail and food service end and see what happens and test that with how things go for us. But I'll be back this summer. So I always have a few dates, you know, I do enjoy it. I like talking to people and getting that feedback and it's like real.
Yeah, it is. It's so hard to get feedback from the consumers unless you're face to face with them, isn't it?
Yeah. And people will tell me, like, I think most times that I feel like they're honest in a nice way.
Yeah. I know. Usually. Yeah. And I mean, it's great to get that positive feedback, but I think the real learning comes when you get the critical feedback, you know, that is considered a little bit negative. Just like you were saying, when the tortillas are sticking together, that was a real issue that you had to get around and it would have brought value to everybody. So what were some other pieces of feedback that you got that were sort of where some real learning occurred?
I don't know I can't really think of anything super specific. There was often, some people don't really, you know, they just grab things and they don't really pay attention. I'm the same. Like when I'm shopping, I'm just kind of like, I know I want that. And I don't really overlook. But maybe later they'll come back and say, oh, you changed your packaging or the design and they didn't notice then. And they'll say, I like it. Or, you know, plastic is a huge issue in the farmers markets, or everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I would get some pushback on that. So, luckily we do supply, a local package-free grocery store that they can buy the tortillas from there. So I always suggest that.
That's NADA?
Really? Yeah. At NADA.
They're doing such a good job, aren't they?
Yeah. They're a great partner. And, we send a lot of tortillas their way, and it's just good to have that option for people. So, you know, they can still have them, you know, and they can, you know, work with their values.
I'm a huge fan of your new packaging. I saw it on LinkedIn, back when you first launched it, and I commented on it, not even knowing who you were, just because, I was a huge fan of the branding and the direction that you're taking your branding in. And I also see that you're also certified plastic negative through Repurpose, which is also a certified B Corp organization. And I saw that it's one of your aspirations to become a B Corp in the future as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Working with Repurpose, I'd love you to sort of speak to that and the value that it brings to your business and sort of the work that they're doing around the world as well. I think the listeners would find a lot of value in that.
On Repurpose Global?
Yeah, Repurpose Global and sort of the plastic negative sort of framework that you're working within.
Yeah. So, you know, plastic has always been on my mind, like every day. Luckily we found ways to reduce the amount of plastic in the production, like, because we buy 20 kilo bags of flour, so we can use those bags for garbage bags instead of buying plastic. So, you know, if something comes wrapped in plastic, I'm like, how can I reuse this for something? But still, there's an output, and I know there's a lot of consumers, and for me as well, that it bothers. And so I thought, okay, how can I offset this or do something? Because there's a lot of discussion about, you know, biopackaging and compostable packaging. And I hope it happens. That would be so great. You know, and I've used biopackaging before for other products, and, but for tortillas, it just doesn't work. There's no option for me. You know, it has to be shelf safe, you know, and all these other issues that are not just, you know, the recyclable bit.
Its limitations, doesn't it?
So, you know, I thought, okay, well, until something comes along, what can I do? So I just did some research, and there were a couple of options out there, and Repurpose Global, you know, with my conversations with them, it just really resonated with me as a food producer or packaging producer, because I'm outputting these units all the time. And so I needed something to offset that. And, you know, they have several impact partners all over the world, and I got to choose it. And they told me about, you know, they had some suggestions, and, you know, we decided on Takataka in Nairobi, because, you know, they're helping, you know, remove the low waste plastic, which is the huge issue in our oceans. And, also upcycling and trying ways to reuse other packaging that, you know, is supposed to be recycled or repurposed, but it's not. So they're helping with that, and their fitness facility is quite large. And also they're helping, they're employing a lot of women who often, I'm told, have a hard time finding work there because they're women. So they're helping these women find jobs, and they're supporting the community and the family. So it kind of just felt really well-rounded, and it's just not just, okay, I'm paying a certain amount to remove this plastic. I'm also helping these communities and, and women in general, which I'm really passionate about. So
that's awesome. It reminds me, this organization and sort of the decision to sort of work with an organization like this reminds me so much of, you know, impact business and impact work that's being done out there. A couple of episodes ago, I spoke with Keith Ipple from Spring Activated. Do you know Keith by chance?
I know who he is. I haven't met him in person, but I'm familiar with Spring.
They're doing some really cool work at Spring, and, you know, around the work of impact and starting businesses and having a business that has a purpose and, you know, aligns with organizations just like this. So it's really great that you've taken it on your own accord. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's important to have a vision of what your impact's going to be, or, you know, how you're going to, what else can you do? I mean, it's okay if you want to just grow your business and make money, and that's your that's your goal, then fine. But I think we need more. You know, I think just saying this product's natural isn't enough anymore. Yeah. There's more to it than that now. Yeah. And with the newer generations, it's so much more important. You know, my kids are learning about the environment so much more than I did, and probably you did growing up, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's insane how much they're learning, and it's important.
Yeah.
And we have to do something.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anybody out there that's never heard of Repurpose and the work that they're doing out in the world, the way that I sort of think about it is it's sort of like carbon offsetting, you know, like when you're buying your air ticket online with your airline, you've got an opportunity to offset your carbon footprint there. And, you know, with certain organizations that plant trees and so on. So this is a similar sort of program where, as you were saying, they're collecting plastic out of the environment that's greater than the amount of plastic that you're putting out into there. So that's why it's considered plastic negative. Is that right?
Yeah. So I'm removing twice the amount, and they have two streams. They have plastic neutral and negative. But for me, the negative just felt better.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really not a crazy amount of money to put forth.
Yeah.
You know, so it was manageable. So I said, why not?
That's awesome.
Let's remove twice the amount and do more.
Yeah, no, why not? And just looking on their website as well, they've got calculators and so on that can help you sort of figure out the output of plastic that you've got and sort of figure out the impact that your business is having as well. So yeah, definitely anybody out there that's in CPG that's working with a plastic-based product, I'd recommend that you have a look at that.
Definitely. And they maybe you're talking about the microsite, because they create that for you as well. And it kind of tracks your progress as you go, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And any individual can go on and figure out what their, you know, footprint is. You know.
Yeah, I discovered your microsite when I was doing some research on your business, and I'm going to post it up in the show notes as well. So if anybody wants to check it out, just have a look at the show notes and I'll provide the link there so you can all have a look.
Awesome.
No worries. So the initial business model versus your sort of go-to-market. So I guess, you know, you were at farmers markets and you decided that you needed to scale up the business. So you went and you were working in a kitchen with another partner. How did you sort of go about scaling the business? You know, you've already told the story about how you bought some equipment down in Mexico, but what other steps did you have to take to get the product into more people's hands?
I had to automate a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So there has been more machinery that I've had to import. In the beginning, my team was larger than it is now because everything was handmade pretty much. It was not automated at all, really, just the one machine. So I had to, you know, bring in a lot more, and, you know, that was fun.
Yeah.
Importing is a good thing. My sister works for UPS, so it was very helpful. So that kind of got, you know, me to the next level, because I could make more output, and then I could go and get more partners and get more sales.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but seems like I could produce, you know, a million tortillas a day, but you know, if people don't know who you are, then it's not going to move off the shelf. So marketing is just always a struggle to, you know, become more than a tiny, tiny fish in this big sea of CPG. It's just a crazy world, and takes a long time. And I really had blinders in the beginning. I thought you would just put it out and everyone would know. I wish.
So what was your strategy? Like, did you partner up with a distributor? Did you go into, you know, each individual banner and speak to the store managers? What was your strategy for that?
Yeah, well, I asked around a lot to anyone that I met, like if they, you know, through the farmer's market. Luckily, I met a lot of other, you know, vendors, and if they were in a certain store, I would say, oh, how did you get in there? What did you say? What'd you do? And, you know, the community is so supportive. So everyone, you know, always tries to help each other out. And I got a business coach that also, you know, helped me, you know, get on track with that and figure out how to approach better and how to get my marketing better in line, like my sell sheet, and work on make sure my pricing was good and things like that. So that was super helpful. But every single sale is pretty much me boots on the ground going in there. And I'm not good at it. I'm uncomfortable doing it. You know, they see you walking in with the, you know, the bag and the sell sheet in your hand, you know, and everyone's so busy, and it's not my favorite thing to do. I need to work on that, but I do enjoy talking to people and talking about it and discussing, but, you know, actually like, getting the final, yes, you're in, you know, sometimes you don't get that right away. It takes a lot of follow-up and it's, you know, it hurts a lot. It hurts your ego a lot because, you know, how many times can your email not be responded to? And why are they doing that? They must hate it. And everybody hates it, you know, and your mind just kind of goes there, you know, people hate this. And so you have to just talk to yourself and be like, no, like everyone's busy. Like, you know, you just got to hustle harder and don't give up. And if you don't hear a no, that's not, you know, it's not a no.
It's not a no forever. That's right.
Kept going and kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they could come back. You could circle back to it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, some of it does have to do with, you know, how the packaging is, you know, if they don't like it, they think that's not going to sell because it's not going to attract people. That might make a buyer say, no, I'm not, I'm just guessing. Mm. But, you know, it takes a lot of, you know, to really hustle. You have to really hustle hard to get those sales in. I do not have a distributor. I've been doing it all myself. But soon I'll have a distributor. By the end of this year, hopefully, if everything pans out.
Great. You mentioned two things. So I've got a couple of questions after that. So the first piece, you're right, like sales is purely a numbers game and you've just got to just work on those numbers because eventually like a percentage of those numbers will close. And that's something that I've learned being in sales as well. However, you're right. The mental aspect of sales is real and you've got to be in the right frame of mind and you've got to, you know, have great positive conversations in your head to be able to walk through that door. So what's your sales formula? Yeah. How do you get yourself to a point where cognitively you are ready to walk through that door and have the conversation? Tell us a little about that.
I know I have to do it.
Yeah.
No one else is going to do it.
Yeah.
Right now I am my sales team. So, I just tell myself, you know, if you want to get this in that store, then go in there and try to impress them.
Yeah.
And, find someone that you can talk to that is the right person. And sometimes that's even a challenge, you know, the buyer's not there and you get a card and, you know, so I just keep going. And, sometimes I do give up, honestly, because, you know, I've had product inside stores. And then, you know, I followed up, you know, and followed up and followed up and followed up and there's no reorder and that's disheartening.
Yeah.
I've given up because I'm just like, well, you know, they don't want it. You know, they tried it and they don't want it and it's too bad. I'll come back to it. Maybe when the brand's more well known, you know, because every store has a different, amount they want to move. A week, I think. So if you're not making that, then, you know, someone else is going to roll in pretty quick because they get so many sales calls every day, I'm sure. I don't know about COVID. I didn't really do much sales during COVID. I had people come to me, which is great.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really going into stores to make sales.
Okay, cool. The second question I had to ask, so you just mentioned a business coach. So at what point did you realize that you were at a point where you needed a business coach or wanted a business coach? And how did you go about sourcing this person?
Yeah, I didn't really know that I needed one. Mm-hmm. but I obviously we all do.
We all do. Yeah, absolutely.
If you're not, like, you know, no one knows everything about this world. And
yeah,
anyone that you can talk to that knows something about it that can help you is so beneficial. And so actually, you know, I did a lot of, you know, I did feeding growth and I do a lot of webinars and I'm always trying to learn and, you know, but there's only so much time in the day, but actually it was like a day of coaching or like a group session on something. I forget what it was about now, but growing your business, I think just like general stuff.
Yep.
And there was a lady there that was leading that. Her name is Andrea Gray Grant.
Andrea Gray. I've got her coming onto the show next week.
Awesome.
I do. So, yeah. I'm really excited for the conversation. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So, and it stuck with me how, you know, just how she made me feel comfortable. Like there was no, you know, judgment about being so, you know, so small and a small business and, you know, and she, her, you know, I had her information. And when I was developing the fillings, the mushroom fillings, you know, I called her up and I said, you know, I think I have something. Can you try it? And can you give me some feedback? And can you tell me help me with this, you know, whatever you want to, anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so I met with her and, you know, that's where our relationship began. And I always tell her I'll never let her go because she's just so So great. So great so to valuable. Have Blake on your team.
Yeah, well, as I just suggested before, I've spoken to Sarah at Chiwis and I've spoken to Eve at Eve's Crackers, and both of them have worked with Andrea as well. So you're three from three so far. So that's really funny.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, and there's other people that I've talked to, like I did some work with Lloyd James Group. You know, they offer a Grocery Insights program that I went through, and they were super valuable talking to them. So I really appreciate all of their coaching as well.
And is that where you met Bruce Wellinger, who introduced us?
Oh yeah, you know Bruce. Yeah, that's how I met Bruce.
Good. Yeah. I thought that was the case.
He's like an endless amount of information.
Isn't he? Yeah, I know. I'm trying to get him onto the podcast as well, but he's such a busy guy.
Yeah.
And we're just trying to make the stars align so that we can.
Now he's busy with seaweed.
Yeah, very busy with seaweed. So I want to have that conversation as well, because I think there's a great story to be told around that and the future of sort of sustainability in the oceans that we can have as well.
Yes, definitely. I hope so.
Yeah. So it sounds to me as if you have held on to quite a few of the business functions, whether it's, you know, business development and sales, or whether it's, you know, product development and scaling the business within the organization as well. Is there any component of the business that you have outsourced?
As I can manage it, I do it. So in the beginning, definitely I wore every single hat.
Yeah.
And it was exhausting. Mm-hmm. And then as the business has grown, I'm able to hire out and contract out things that I know are not my strongest thing. And I know I don't have to be good at everything. So I'm trying to focus on the things that I am the best at. And also I'm still figuring out, you know, what is my role and role going to be here? Because luckily I get to choose whatever I want.
Yeah.
So, you know, now, you know, I've got my team that also, they do the production for me. So I don't have to be, you know, focused on that. I trust them that they're going to do a good job and take care of my little tortilla babies.
Yeah.
I've outsourced for, you know, my books and for marketing and for things like that. But I have not outsourced for anything to do with, you know, representing the business and sales, because I feel like if anyone should be doing that right now, it should be me.
Yeah,
I really want
the face of the business. Yeah.
Yeah. I really want my partners to know who I am and remember me and have a good relationship with my buyers, so that, you know, if there is any issues, like for instance, my second shipment of the new design packaging was late, you know, so I had to have that, you know, uncomfortable conversation that's like, well, you know, I can't bring you anything until I have this packaging. So, you know, but they were so understanding, because I feel like I have built a good relationship with them.
Yeah, that sucks, you know, at the moment, and I'm sure you're totally aware of it, but the world is just, in when it comes to logistics, the world has came to a grinding halt because of COVID, and everybody is dealing with this issue right now. You know,
there are a lot of jars. Yeah.
Oh, man. Jars and anything that's being loaded onto a shipping container.
You never know. It was frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. This is the first time I've outsourced out for packaging. So, you know, the experience overall was good, and the work that they did was great.
Yeah.
You know, I followed every little, you know, all the deadlines, and it still was late. So, you just never know, know. You can't be perfect, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sorry that's happened to you. Because I can imagine the amount of stress that would have put on your business. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little bit of time, not in production. So it hurt a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got a team now. How big is your team at Leaders?
Right now I have three staff, and because we're semi-automated, so we can actually do a lot with a smaller team.
That's really cool.
In 2 months, hopefully, fingers crossed, if everything still works out, we'll be moving into a new facility, a larger facility in Richmond.
Oh, great.
So super excited. It's going to be so awesome. And then we can really ramp up more. And so the team will be growing once we're in there.
That's cool. So were you new to managing people, or is this something you've done throughout your working history as well?
No, it's my first time.
Okay.
My first time. Yeah.
Cool.
I don't think I was very good at it in the beginning, but learning.
It's like anything. It is a learning experience. So, you know, now that you've been at it for a while, how do you approach leadership?
I try not to, I think in the beginning I was very hovery.
Yeah.
You know, because you want everything to be so perfect, and letting go and letting someone else do something that you've always done, and you've seen every little step and perfected every little step. That was super tough for me. So I've learned to not do that anymore, but at the same time, not go so far that I made the mistake before where I didn't say anything. So when things were happening that I didn't like, or I knew were wrong, I was like, oh, don't bug them, you know, like, don't be that type of boss that's always, you know, do this right and do that right. So I learned how to take a step back and just kind of watch and see how people are doing things when I'm there on the floor, and then, you know, just make suggestions and just say, hey, you know, this is the way that I know will maybe work better. Try this, yeah. You know, because shortcuts happen and people veer off because, you know, you're doing it every day and they're just pumping it out and they're working so hard, and I don't want to interrupt their flow. But at the same time, if I see something, now I'm more comfortable stepping in and saying, hey, you know, let's try this or try that and see how that works. And does that make sense? And you know, and listening to their suggestions as well, as much as I can, you know, it's about all I can do for now. Like I'm really trying to, you know, make them feel supported and inclusive as well. You know, and you know, I have the team with me right now is just so great, and I'm so thankful for them. They work really hard for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it sounds to me, as Leaders is growing, you're also doing a huge amount of growth as well, personally.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. What other areas of your life do you think that, you know, being a business operator and a startup business operator in particular has sort of allowed you to grow in your personal life?
I think one of the main things is that I'm way more confident. I've grown a lot as a person and as a woman as well. Like, you know, when I started this, I was, you know, in, I guess 5 or 6 years ago. So it was, you know, my late 30s, and now you just change as you get older naturally, but, you know, I feel way more confident in myself, and I can tackle things better. I feel like I'm a better communicator with my husband, and I feel like, you know, I'm try to be the best mom I can and raise them to be good communicators as well when they're, you know, feeling frustrated or whatever it may be. So I think it's all kind of, it has deflected into my personal life as well, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, work and personal life, they're definitely not separate, especially when it's your business. You know, it's all rolled into one.
But yeah, it's kind of 24/7.
Yeah, it doesn't stop. I grew up with my parents being business owners as well.
Yeah.
And so I saw them, you know, experiencing life in terms of trial by fire, you know, running a business and, you know, things that worked and things that didn't work. And, you know, that's definitely impacted me in the way that I approach things as well and how I see life. And what an awesome role model for you two young girls.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope they see what I'm doing. So the younger one is very different. They're so different from each other, but she's more of an outgoing person. So I remember farmer's market, she said, okay, I'm going to bring these old toys. Like, she had all these My Little Ponies, and she's like, I'm going to sell them too. And I was like, all right. Like, you know, luckily nobody minded, but she had her own little like spot and set up and, you know, and everyone was like, oh, cool. Like, you're teaching her how to be an entrepreneur too. And I was like, yeah, maybe, I hope so. I hope they see what I'm doing and seeing how hard I'm working and see that as a value. That's all I can do, really. And try to be there for them.
I know. Well, I've got such young kids and your kids are a little bit older, but I'm sure you'd agree that they don't miss a beat. They see everything. And so they're definitely watching you. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. I think they're watching me when I'm home. They complain when I'm not home sometimes, but
I can. I want to speak to you or have you speak a little bit to the awards that you've won over time and the impact that that's had on your business as well.
So I guess the first award was the farmer's market vendor for a non-farmer category.
Yeah.
That was super nice because it made me just feel like more included in the community and that what I was on the right track, because it was pretty early on. It was in 2017.
Yeah.
And then the next one was the BC Gold one. And you know, I think that was, you know, the innovation of the taco kits really helped with that. And it was it was an interesting experience because it felt so good. It felt so validating, you know, from all the hard work I'd been doing. And I was like, okay, I'm on the right track. People do like this, you know? And, but then it's funny because, the week following that win, it was the lowest point I felt, because I felt like, okay, you know, you had this super, super high moment of being on that stage and winning something and feeling so like validated. And then for the next week, I just felt so low, like, no, this is not good. And and I just went down, and I don't know why, because I'm not that type of person, but it just really got to me for some reason. And I had to talk to a lot of friends, and they're like, what are you talking about? Like, this is a huge deal and it's going to do great things for you. And it really did. It opened up a lot of doors. Because just before that, I just had the tortillas, not just, but you know, they were hard to get attention because they were like, well, it's just another bread, you know, and you know, the placement of it is difficult because it has to be in cooler or freezer. It's not shelf stable. So I struggled a bit with that in stores. But after that win, it really, you know, shone a light on the business and what I've done. And it really opened up a lot. I got a lot of calls, and it got me into a lot of places. And, and so that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that was a super great part of it. It also got me a lot more contacts within the industry, which has been great. I've made a lot more friends and met so many amazing women that I love, and I consider them like really great friends in this space. And, you know, so that was a great part of it. And then the one that I won at Andrea's show, that was the silver. That was a great, she does that show every year, which she'll probably talk about to you, but it's a great trade show because, you know, it's like so intimate, and I'm someone that I don't like a lot of crowds. I don't like going to the mall, and, you know, I don't like going to places where there's so many people. So a traditional like trade show like CFA or something, I know I'll feel uncomfortable with that. So hers is great because it's a lot smaller and it's more intimate, and you have really had the time to talk to these buyers, and she got a lot of great buyers in there. And so, you know, winning that really, you know, shone the light on me too, and I got into more doors from that as well.
That's awesome. So how were these awards sort of judged? Was it via, you know, popularity, via, you know, your peers, or who was did they come about?
The farmers market one was by the community and peers.
That's huge.
So that was that. I really am happy about that one.
Yep.
And the gold one was there was a panel of five judges that you had to stand in front of, and they called it like a Dragon's Den style. And you had to pitch for like, I think I had 3 minutes, and I had to just pitch the product, and they tried it. And luckily they liked it, and they had really great feedback, so that's how I won that. It was just purely on those five judges that work in the industry, of all different sectors, like chefs and whatever. And then the one at Andrea's show was voted by everyone that came. So she has like little iPad at the door where you can vote before you leave. So it was voted by the visitors.
Well, congratulations on all three awards. It sounds like, you know, they've all had a huge impact on your business, and you've worked so hard to achieve them.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
No worries. Now, we could take this conversation in a few different directions, but, you know, one question that I'd really like to ask you. So, you know, you've spoken about community, and I've spoken on this podcast a few times, and one topic that keeps on coming up is the power of having a network and a community around you to sort of not only open doors, as you just suggested, but to also leverage in terms of support. So tell us about some of the impact that, you know, having a really strong network has had around you.
Well, like we talked about in the beginning, it's a little difficult not having our family here.
Yeah.
Not just at home, but also, in business, just having that extra year, you know, of my dad or whatever. But luckily, you know, they're only a phone call away. So even when I do need something, like if there is an award I'm applying for, and I tell my, you know, my family back east and friends back east, or the community that I've built in Vancouver, I get so much great support from it. And you know, it means so much, because some people I've never met or I haven't seen in years and years and years, and they're telling me like, oh, I just voted for you, because, you know, they believe in me still, after not seeing me since high school probably. So it's just been like it's invaluable. Like you can't, I don't think you can do it without it. You need to have this people around you and that are always, you know, making you feel better when you're down, or in particular, like the group of women that I've met, you know, we Zoom once a month and have a little group, and, you know, we text each other or whatever, you know. If you wake up, sometimes I wake up and I have a text that just says, good morning, you're going to rock it today. Like stuff like that. It just, you know, you can't do it without it. And like, you just need that support, because it's such a hard industry. It's so difficult. And, you know, those things just kind of keep me going.
Yeah, I agree. I've been working with a coach as well, and I've got my little network that I've got, and from the coaching group. And from that, what we've got is called an accountability partner. It seems like a very similar thing that you've got with all of your network as well, in that, you know, we'll shoot each other a text message almost daily, you know. And so I've got Pricey, and he's back in Brisbane, moving to Melbourne as well. So it's awesome that he's an Australian. But yeah, we're both on the same page, both driving really hard in our career and with our aspirations. Yeah. And it's just great to be working with other people that are on the same playing field as you, but also in the same frame of mind and trying to move in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. Like they feel the hustle as much as me, and also they want to support me as much as I want to support them. They want to see me succeed, and I want to see them succeed, and it's just an endless stream of support. And it couldn't be better. It's just like getting it from my dad or my mom. Like it's the same when they say, you know, I'm proud of you. And it's like, it feels so good, because, you know, you're like, okay, you know, keep going.
Yeah, it's nice to have that validation there too. You mentioned before, coming off the back of the awards, you sort of had that week where you were sort of, you know, you'd been riding that high wave, and then you were sort of, you'd ridden up onto the beach, and I've used that analogy before, and then you had to turn around and paddle back out again through the waves. And it's a bit of a storm that you got to get through.
Yeah.
You did get yourself out of it, because you had your network of friends around you who are like, come on, you've done really, really well. Let's get back on the horse here.
Yeah.
So if you were to encounter that again, which I'm sure you most likely will, like we all do have peaks and troughs, you know, especially on a business journey as well, what would be the formula that you would apply to either get yourself out of it in a quicker period of time, or even try to avoid it?
I don't know if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
Because it, like you said, it's a roller coaster, and, I describe it as being a roller coaster where every now and then you're getting punched in the gut.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's just, it's never ending putting out fires, like, but also every time you do, it's such a great thing. And it's like, I made it through that. Like I did that challenge. And so it is highs and lows, but, it evens out so that you can maintain, I guess, the process of it all. But, you know, I have, you know, I couldn't do it without, you know, my friends and family and my husband, who's, you know, my ear when I come home and I'm like, you wouldn't believe, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm like, I don't want your advice. I don't want you to fix this. I just want you to listen to it, you know, and he's good at that now. and then, you know, I do kickboxing, and I find that's very helpful to keep me, you know, if I have something in my mind that I just can't shake it, I go there and I punch it out and feel somewhat better.
That's so awesome.
All those things help.
How often are you working out? Is that, you know, a daily process for you, or is this something you're doing a couple of times of the week?
It varies. It could be four times a week, it could be two. It just depends on my schedule.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that for?
I've been into kickboxing for I guess maybe like 4 years off and on.
Yep.
And so, you know, I just kind of coming back. It's the one that I enjoy the most, so I always come back to, you know.
That's awesome.
And sometimes I just do my routine at home, or sometimes I get, and luckily the gym I go to is still able to be open, so it's great, because I really look forward to it.
Yeah, I bet. And, you know, coming out of a really heavy session as well, you'd have a clear head, and you probably approach things a little bit differently as well afterwards.
Yeah, it does clear things up a bit, and it's amazing how good you feel when you punch something. like you just kind of imagine the problem on the bag and punch it, and it does help.
That's cool. Yeah. Do you, so tell me a little bit more about your daily process as well. Like, are you approaching the day with, you know, a list of to-dos, or what's, how do you get through your day?
Well, you know, I have to get up every morning and we have to get the kids to school. So, you know, I try to go to bed early, but, you know, that doesn't always happen. So I just kind of wake up and, you know, I try to resist going to my phone right away. I think that's a bad habit, but I think a lot of us do that. But I have to, I look up, open up my calendar and it's just like, I look at the list because I have to write down everything. I'm paranoid of forgetting something. So, you know, just kind of go through it and I reorganize it if something changed and think about how, okay, you know, you got to do this by this, you know, you got to get through this, you got to do it. This can wait, or this can, you know, I could actually do this tomorrow to lighten my load. And, you know, just kind of think, you know, there's no one else that's going to do it. It's me. So just, you know, get up and get stuff, get it done, just get it done. And, you know, at the end of the day, if I need a glass of wine for getting it all done to congratulate myself, that's what I'll do.
Good for you. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we have covered so much ground and I've learned such a lot from you. If there was one thing that you would tell a budding food-based entrepreneur that was just starting out that you could tuck under your wing and have a word to, what would you tell them?
Gosh. Sometimes I do get like reached out to by my new entrepreneurs in CPG, and I'm always happy to share any experience to anyone if they want to reach out. I don't know everything, please don't think that, but I'm always happy to say my experience if it helps at all. And I think that there's so many things, but maybe the main thing is that, you know, it's a long haul, and you have to wrap your head around that pretty quick, or you're going to feel tired. You know, it's a slog. It's a bit of a slog. So, you know, if you can see that, you know, this is not like the way I thought it was going to be a 1-year thing and magically I was going to be a unicorn, you know, and make it, if you can, and that happens, and that's great for the people that do, but in most cases it doesn't. It could take 10, it could take 20 years to, be the success that you want to be. So just, I think that's something that you should, be aware of and know that, you know, you can definitely do it, but you know, it's a long road to get it done.
That's awesome. Well, that's such a great piece of advice as well. And I guess, you know, that word success, everybody has their own definition of success as well. What's your definition of success and what do you think leaders being successful looks like to you?
I guess it's always changing, you know, in the beginning, success was getting into Whole Foods and you know, I achieved, and so every goal is all these mini successes that I try to make sure that I remember. I just started this year actually writing post-its and putting them on my wall for every time I overcome something or succeed something or get something major done without everything crashing around me, because at the end every month you're like, I didn't do anything, you know. But you did so much. I think that's something I look to just try to, you know, celebrate the small wins. And then, you know, eventually my end goal is to have world domination of my tortillas.
That's awesome. What a huge goal. And I'm sure that you're definitely well and truly on your way.
That's going to take a lot. I hope so. Just getting national would be great as a first step. But if I could have my products in Mexico, that would be a real dream.
Huge. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, what's the best way for everybody to get in touch with you? And I've spent some time on your website and you do have a beautiful website. It's so thorough and you cover so much in there. But yeah, how would everybody want to get in touch with you and speak to you and have a conversation?
Definitely like LinkedIn, or, you know, there's an email on the website, or through Instagram, Facebook chat, like any of those places. I'm happy to connect.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jackie. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Hayden. It was really great.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye. Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions from today's episode or would like to know more about what I can do to help you achieve your packaging vision, you can reach me directly at hayden@thepackheavypodcast.com. You could DM me on Instagram @thepackheavypodcast, or we could also connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there. I'll see you next week.